give me one shot here on a blue chip stock, believe me, Kevin, the only problem you're gonna have is that you didn't buy more.
Nobody knows if the stock is gonna go up, down, sideways, or in circles.
What's going on, NBA Draft fans? Your boys are back, the Wolves of Ball Street, your favorite draft analyst, favorite draft analysts. My name is Corey Tullibut, and I am here, as always, with my co-host, Albert Garbage Time Gim, for a very special New Year's Eve edition of the NBA Draft Show on the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed. Albert, how are we doing tonight?
Belated Merry Christmas, Corey. Yes. It's that season, New Year's. It's, you know, the holiday season is always great. And, you know, it also gives us an opportunity. I've been thinking a lot about, like, what I've learned in the last year, what I've gained, what I want to work on next year. And I felt like, you know, our episode today was a great opportunity for us to look back at the last year while also kind of looking forward. And I'm really excited to get into our year-end award show. Look at us all dressed up, yep, committed to the bit. I'm just excited. And we also haven't recorded in a couple of weeks. So
that's right.
Great timing on all that. So, yeah.
Yeah, great time to be alive. Today, we're going to have a fun episode. We're celebrating the new year. But in doing that, we are going to make a play on the Spotify Wrapped theme. And we're going to do a No Ceilings NBA Draft Wrapped right now for the year of 2024 and, you know, for this 2024-2025 NBA Draft class. So we're going to start out by doing our most watched prospect. Mm-hmm. So, Albert, the floor is yours. Who have you spent the most time watching this year? And this could be you're watching him because you love this prospect so much. You just are so enthralled by his game. It could be because you're just confused and you just need more time with him. Who has been the guy that you have watched the most this year?
So originally, Corey, when we were talking about this, my brain went to a lot of different places just because I don't think we have like official numbers, or there's no way for us to officially pull how much we've been watching, guys. But I was thinking, like, even like last year's class, right, which is within 2024, and this class, I was looking at everything. And then also just I was going through all the playlists that you make on Synergy and looking at all the different guys that I created playlists for. And there are a couple of names, but the one that I wanted to bring up today was because I actually have a couple of guys, but I'll give it to you, Matt, as a group. So the first guy on my list, because I had the most playlists for him, which is weird because it was like really hard to get footage of him. And I think it was really just me like constantly repeat watching a lot of the stuff that I had, was Hugo Gonzalez for Real Madrid. And I watched so much of him because there's not a lot to watch of him. If that makes sense. And, you know, watching the Adidas Next Gen stuff, watching international stuff, and then, you know, with the limited minutes he's had this year for Real Madrid, just trying to extract as much as I could from the limited film out there was a big project of mine and something that I continue to do just because he's a prospect that we did a pod on previously, Corey. Mm-hmm. And we both walked away liking him. And I still like him a lot. And I think part of it is like me trying to justify why I like him by constantly rewatching this limited footage. So one guy I wanted to bring up was Hugo. Before I get to my next guy, I'll let you go. But I really wanted to just say that it's been quite the mission with Hugo Gonzalez, but I'm not giving up on him. I'm still excited about his future as an NBA prospect. And so, yeah, he took up a lot of my time, which is weird because it's like kind of not similar, but like when I looked at my Spotify Wrapped this year, I was expecting somebody else. And it turns out that I just listened to a ton of Frank Ocean this year, which I was confused by because I don't remember listening to that much Frank Ocean, but I guess I did. So there's my answer.
I like that answer. Hugo is, you know, he's a guy who I think that it's like this out of sight, out of mind situation. And we look at him as this guy who's not really playing a lot and we go, oh, he must be playing poorly. And for him, you know, he's playing in this legitimate basketball league, yeah, behind so many like former NBA players. He's not playing because he sucks. He's not playing because he's not as experienced as these veteran guys on his team, right? And, you know, he's on one of the historically best teams to play on, but he still has a ton of tools. He's still been, I think, showing really great defensive flashes when he does get the opportunity. But the opportunities are really few and far between, and it's hard to kind of make out what he has developed into this year, because I just don't think we're going to see it. He's either playing in garbage time, right, or garbage time. And it's hard to look good in limited minutes, and especially as a young player, sometimes you start to press, you know, you start trying to do too much. It just becomes this thing where you're trying to maximize your minutes, and sometimes it just, like, it could look sloppy or out of control because you're just trying to, you know, prove a point on the court. So it's interesting, though, that because of that, this is a guy that you're like, all right, I need to understand this and watch more, because contextually, like, he might come over more experienced than these guys, just playing against these guys every day in this league, and that are versus these guys who were in college. And he didn't come over like Yegor and Kasparis, and yeah. And maybe it's not fair that he's, you know, falling on Mock so much. And one of the things that I've been thinking lately, if you're like active in this draft community, and if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are. Sometimes it feels like big boards are power rankings and not projections. You know, it's like flavor of the week, who's the hot prospect of that everyone's talking about, and that guy will rise up a board or whatever. And sometimes we forget that you need to project into the future, and a guy like Hugo, like, who knows, like, he might just be in a tough situation for him based on the playing time, and maybe he made a bad decision. Maybe he should have come over to college and had more runway, but he didn't. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he's not going to be like a good NBA player down the line. So because he still has great tools, right? He still potentially could be like a two-way guy on the wing. So I think that's an interesting choice, that he would be the guy that you've kind of settled in on as the guy that you go, all right, I need to see more.
Yeah. Yeah. And like we talked about, Corey, it partially the reason why I've been watching so much of Hugo is because of what happened to me and Nolan Traore, just like wanting to make sure that I'm not skewing my evaluation too much because I initially liked a guy. And so, and it's been so difficult because of everything that we've talked about and you've outlined as well. It's just because of, you know, the context that he's in. It's so hard to get like new and fresh information from him as a prospect. And yet, so like I'm battling, right? Like, you have that juxtaposition of like how you felt initially, and then like the very limited new data that you're getting, which makes it really hard to come to like a rational, objective evaluation. And so that's kind of where I'm at right now. And so I did want to highlight that because he might not be like my number one most watched, but it stuck out to me how much I've watched him. And so I wanted to bring that up.
Yeah. I love it. I'm going to keep it international. I think my most watched prospect of this cycle has been Kasparis Iakaciūnas. And with Kasparis, I think one, I'm in the process of watching most of his games so I can cut clips up, because, you know, he'll be the first scouting video of this cycle now that we're finally getting like enough games that I'm putting together. But two, you know, I think his games have been televised, and I'm usually not a like live
same
watcher. I'll usually watch on Synergy. I mean, I'll watch the games live when I go to them, right? But typically, I'd rather just watch on Synergy. But, you know, due to my scheduling with the baby, and sometimes I'm just downstairs, you know, on the couch alone. And his games are on Peacock or whatever, Big Ten, blah, 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 and they're on. So I've watched a ton of Illinois. And I've really been focusing in on Iakaciūnas. One, I myself am Lithuanian. So it's nice to this year have a Lithuanian basketball prospect that I feel like I could fully support and get behind. Two, he's a guy that we've talked about before. I didn't really think he blew me away at Hoop Summit when we saw him live. I thought he was good. I thought he had good skills, but he was just kind of somebody who fit in. And he's been this really hot prospect out in the draft world recently, because he's been on fire. He's had multiple 20-point, I think he had 5 20-point games in a row. He's really filling it up. He's worked his way not only into a top five conversation, but potentially even the top three for a lot of people. And so I've really been trying to dial in on what his strengths are, what his weaknesses are, what players he reminds me of. Do I think that he can fill that role at the next level? And what can he do when he's not necessarily playing with the ball in his hands as much? So I've really been trying to focus in on a lot of things. And I really like Kasperis. He's been undeniably good. I think that the shot is starting to level out a little bit. But he's capable of making tough jumpers. You know, he can score at three levels. He's strong. He's physical. A couple of games, I was really impressed at his like screen navigation defensively. I think off the ball, Illinois has kind of been a mess in general. Everybody just really overcommits to their man off the ball a lot of the times instead of like being in help. And maybe that they just want to take away the 3-point line and give up layups. But sometimes it, you know, comes back to bite them a little bit. But you know, he's so good, but there are things that I just go, all right, I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure he's a top three guy yet. You know, he's very turnover prone. He tends to get 2 feet in the paint and bury himself a little bit. You know, he drives into multiple defenders sometimes. You know, I don't think he's quite the playmaker as some of the other guys in the class, even though he's a good passer for sure. And I'm just trying to figure out what it looks like. And I've landed on guys like Brandon Pajemski, maybe a little Kirk Heinrich, guys like that who were like definite NBA rotation guys, even really, really good players. But, you know, I've heard people say like stylistically, he's a little Luka and this and that. And it's just like, that's where I get it because he's so on ball and he hits step backs and he's like, but it's, you know, I think the 6'6 listing is generous.
Yes. Yes.
I know that you like to at standing at 6'3, you know, when you get to stand next to these guys. I don't know what your impression of him was at Hoop Summit height wise. There were multiple measurements at Hoop Summit. One, I think he was 6'4 with a 6'5 wingspan. Then another one, he was 6'5 and a half with a 6'6 wingspan. I think at Basketball Without Borders, he measured with a 6'7 and a half inch wingspan. So his measurements are all over the place. He is strong. He's definitely plus size, but I'm not sure if he's like super plus size, but I really like him. I think he is definitely proven to be in the mix for the top five. And I've just spent a ton of time nitpicking and breaking down his game or the things that I like and I don't like. And it's been really fun because even though I feel like I do tend to be harsher on Lithuanian prospects because I don't want to let my bias for them show really. And but he's a guy that, like, even with the nitpicks, there's still so much to like. So he's been the guy I've really watched the most this year.
Corey, I love that answer on a couple of levels. Number one, it's funny because everything that you outlined, I feel like Nate Babcock on Twitter has been kind of doing the same thing. And I want to kind of give him a shout out because I feel like he's been really fair. Yeah, I think he's been really fair about Yakshonis. You know, he said in one of his tweets, like, I think he's a top three guy. However, I also think there are some concerns, right? And I think a lot of the stuff that you said, you know, he had some similar takes on that. And he was a little bit worried about some of the scoring translating to the next level and stuff like that. And so I think it's a good answer. And I think, Corey, to be honest, standing next to him, he felt like he was 6'4 to me. And so that initial listing at 6'4, I thought that was really accurate. And then
maybe, shoes 6'4?
Yeah. So he was in shoes at the time.
Right.
So okay, yeah.
But he wasn't towering over you.
No, that's why I feel like 6'4 was kind of fair. But then again, who knows, right? I didn't have a measure with me. But I did wonder if like 6'4 was right and then someone made a call and was like, yo, fix that. And then they sent us the new sheets of paper after that.
I think that might have been for VJ.
Oh, well, yeah, that too. But overall, dude, like I'm with you. He's been really, really impressive. But I've, Corey, been in like a similar mind on two things. Like, number one, how you feel about Lithuanian players is exactly how I feel about Xavien Lee right now. All my buddies are like, yo, this Korean Canadian guy, like he's sick, right? And I keep telling them, like, oh, he's fine. And I feel like I'm like overly harsh about it and telling them like,
sometimes I'm like, yo, Albert, Xavien Lee is sick, right?
Yeah, I know, you're right. You're right. But like all my buddies are like, yo, he's sick. What are you talking about? And like, I'm trying to like temper expectations a little bit just because like we've never really had a Korean guy in the league, especially one to this caliber. Like we've never had like a Korean guard. We've only had a giant center that played for the Blazers for like a year and a half. And I went to see him live at MSG and he almost fouled out in garbage time, which was unreal. So like with Xavier, I'm the same way.
I'm with
like,
you.
Yeah, well, I'm like really critical with Xavier and I want to like make sure, and I've been even like reserved with my rankings of him on my big boards just because like I don't want to, you know, let that bias influence me. But going back to Yakushonis, dude, like I get it. I totally get it. He's a guy that he's had such a hot start that you want to continue to see more to make sure that it wasn't just a hot start and that all this continues to translate throughout the college basketball season. But, you know,
he was hooping in the FIBA tournament. Like, he's freaking good.
Yes.
Like, not to get it twisted. But especially when you start talking about these guys in this range, you have to nitpick them. Right? Like, James Bailey is a guy who's been nitpicked to death, right? Like, these guys have to be nitpicked. Like, if you're investing draft capital like that, because it's your team just sucked for an entire year for you to possibly get somebody who can make it better. And if you're just pie in the sky, rosy, you know, rose colored glasses with it, you might miss.
Which is why, Corey, later, I have a lot to say when we talk about Jeremiah Fears, which we will.
Okay.
Because, yeah, well, let me hold it till we get there. But it's like what you just said, Corey, about expectations and like context and like weighing and balancing like what pick you have versus what you're looking for versus like what you're expecting from a college kid. Like all that I've been thinking about so much, so I can't wait to talk about that. But yes.
Okay. Should we move on to our next NBA draft wrapped segment?
Yeah.
This is going to be our 2024 prospect evolution. So if you had Spotify, right, like it would be, it was like, for me, it was like in February, you listened to, you know, Blink-182 a ton. By April, you were listening to 90s alternative and you were, you know, bumping the Goo Goo Dolls or something, you know, like, and it was like giving you how your music changed. So this is our prospect evolution. And these are guys that we felt one way about, and then the more the year has gone on, we have evolved our feelings and changed our feelings on them. Is the way that I approach this.
Yeah, agreed. Same.
Okay. So, what is the first guy or the guy that you want to talk about for your prospect evolution?
I have two because first guy.
I have two as well.
Okay. Cool. I want to do, you know what, Corey? I'll do the first one and then let you go. First guy for me, Traore.
He was for me too.
Yeah. Like and I'm going to say it again. And also, Corey, like this is something I truly firmly believe. I have no ego about being wrong. Like I have this conversation with my wife all the time. Like me and my wife, like this is like really personal, I guess, but we like fight sometimes about saying sorry. Right. And I think about it a lot and I have no problem saying sorry because I have no ego about being wrong. And I've always been that way where it's like, if I'm wrong and there's somebody who knows better than me, I want to learn from that person so that I'm not wrong again in the future. And so Traore is a situation where I need to say on the mic, I was wrong, is how I feel right now. Now, does it mean his career is over? No, but I think the frame in which I was viewing Traore has changed. Leaving Nike Hoop Summit, I thought, dude, this guy is going to be the guy that a team's going to take in the top five. They're going to give him the keys. He's going to run the ship for 15 years and then call it a beautiful career, is what I was thinking with Traore. I thought with the size, the intellect, the downhill speed, the just everything, the playmaking. I even believed in like the shooting upside because I saw him shoot it kind of decently in a shooting drill at the Nike Hoop Summit was where my brain was. The reality is he's still struggling to shoot. And there are still real problems with him dealing with contact and all those things. Like the list is on and on. And so I needed to look myself in the mirror and realize, okay, we need to change the frame in which we're viewing this player. And I have to let the biases of what I saw in person kind of pass by. Does it mean that I think he's going to be a bad player? Absolutely not. I still believe he's going to be a high intellect, good NBA player is where I'm landing right now. But I just can't view him as a top five guy anymore is where I'm at. And so he's definitely the player, because I was so rock solidly strong, staunch about him being top five in my board for like the first month. And then I kind of had to look myself in the mirror and realize like something's got to change here.
But I think that's the right approach, is sometimes you should be patient with guys, because again, I think that sometimes we get caught up in power rankings versus projection. And of course, as you receive new information, you need to change your evaluation. Yeah. But when the samples are so small, because these guys have, you know, only been playing a couple of months, you don't always have to allow that information to fully bypass and take in, you know, this guy had three great games, so now I need to rocket him up 25 spots. Sometimes maybe you look at it and you go, oh, that's going to work. He's finally getting an opportunity. Like, I'm going to bump him up a little bit. But it's okay to be patient, I think. With Traore, though, there are a ton of red flags, right? So it does come to a point where you go, all right, well, I'm patient. I'm trying to project in the future still, and maybe I need to change my projection. And for me, it's getting harder and harder with Nolan to keep him even as like a first round guy almost. And now I think the depth of at the end is open for grabs just in general. So I think that, he still has a lot of tools that make him an interesting first round bet. It's going to be interesting to see if, you know, he continues to kind of catch up to the speed of the game and figure out the nuances and improve. And then I think he's got a real shot to play himself back into maybe not a top five spot, but potentially still being taken in the lottery. Right. He does have great bursts. He does have great speed. I think that his shot looks pretty good. It's a little handsy. I think he's got these big hands, and I think maybe sometimes it could be a little palmy, and that leads to like some inconsistent misses for him. But I think like he's comfortable getting into the shots. I really like his playmaking. And I think when he's making passes, he's doing a good job of like playing into space and kind of playing with different speeds. Whereas when he's a scorer, it seems like he's dead set on, I got to get to the rim. And so he comes off really wide on these screens, and he allows guys to get into the paint. And when you play fast, like unless you're like Derrick Rose, Russell Westbrook fast as a guard, right? Like, and athletic. I think if you're somebody who plays really fast, you're predictable. You know, it in the open court, yeah, maybe it's a little harder, but like in the half court, if you're like, all right, this guy's just going to go really fast, and then he's going to barrel into, you know, the help at the rim, like we'll just meet him there. It'll be fine. You know, and we've seen like Scoot deal with some of that, like very early De'Aaron Fox dealt with some of that, where it's like, if you're only going fast, that speed becomes predictable. And, you know, when he's making plays, I feel like he's mixing up those speeds and he's going slow to fast, high to low. When he's becoming a scorer, like if he's going right, like he's just trying to get to the rim. And if he's going left, he's probably going to get into that pull up a little bit. And he's just predictable, but maybe he figures this stuff out. Maybe he watches film. Maybe he figures out the speed. He starts learning the tendencies of the guys that he's playing against in the scouting report. So who knows, right? Like maybe we shouldn't give up on him completely, but yes, he is somebody for me that my evaluation has changed as well, because he was coming off of, I think, a pretty good summer, really good spring, and the percentages are what they are. Like they don't leave a lot of room for optimism. So I had him too as a guy who I've kind of negatively shifted a little bit on the flip side, a guy that I've really started to get very high on, and my evaluation has changed on him. He's a guy that I always thought was interesting. But it took me, and we've talked about him, it took me seeing him in person. And then, it took me seeing him continue to have really strong outings. And my opinion on Rashear Fleming has really evolved recently. And he's somebody who now I have in my lottery. I mean, I read somewhere, I think, that he said he has a 7'5 wingspan. I mean, he looks long as hell. He's shooting the three well. Yep. He's making better decisions as a passer. And I just think, like, his raw athletic tools mixed with some of these improvements, like he has a clear path as an NBA guy. He's strong, he's athletic, he's long, he can shoot a little bit. And he reminds me, it's like if Patrick Williams had a pulse. Like Patrick Williams sometimes, like, I don't even know that dude is on the floor. He literally has had the same exact stats every single year he's been in the NBA. He had a really encouraging year, and he has had the same exact stats basically like for 4 years. And I think Rashear Fleming is maybe a little less fluid as a ball handler than Patrick Williams was, but like, I think in the role that you want, like, Rashear Fleming can do a lot of the Patrick Williams stuff. And his growth, his physical measurements, just really, really excited about this kid. And, you know, I think NBA teams are hoping that maybe he stays under the radar a little bit. But I think he's going to work his way into the lottery, especially when we get into workout season, measurement season. People are going to absolutely freak out. If he has a 7'4", 7'5" wingspan on measurement day, people are going to lose their freaking minds.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I love this kid's versatility. I think he's going to be able to play some small ball five because he's strong and long and he's got good pop. He rebounds the ball. I really like his game. He's the guy who I think I've evolved on the most, because honestly, like, my board is still fairly similar, I feel like, to what it was coming into the year.
Yeah, Corey, I mean, we did a pod on Fleming not too long ago, right? Am I crazy? I'm pretty sure it was not too long ago we did a pod. He was on.
Yeah,
there.
We did, for sure.
Yeah. And I think since then, Corey, I've seen a lot of things that you're talking about. And I like that tweet that you put out there with that little, I think he caught in a short roll, made a nice pass, weak side, right? Something like that. But he's a guy that, I get it, you know? He's gigantic, right? Well, you know what I mean? Like, he's like this big wing, 6'9", right? Good size, good frame, good athleticism. The wingspan is there, like you said. He's really improved as a shooter. And I think Maxwell had a response to your tweet too, where he was like, yeah, two years ago, he wasn't making that pass, right? And so that speaks to his development, his growth, what he's working on, which, you know, kind of connects to what we talked about with Traore too, where I feel like he can continue to grow and learn. And with everything I've heard about him and his intellect, why not, right? So, but yeah, I think Fleming is a great choice, Corey. A guy that I don't have him in my lottery yet, but who knows, right? Things can change. But I get it. I totally get it. And like you said, he's one of these guys where when measurement season comes around, teams might be absolutely enthralled and might freak out.
Yeah, and honestly, I think he can even have like a Patrick Williams-esque rise to the draft cycle. Like, Patrick Williams was not a top five guy until the last few days of that draft in 2020.
Right.
And when it became like there were rumors that Detroit really liked him over Killian. Obviously, he went earlier than that. But he was a guy that people were like, yeah, you know, like, he's interesting because he's got great measurements, you know, came off the bench, you know, his motor is inconsistent, blah, blah, blah. But like, Fleming, I think, has a motor.
Yep.
You know, you feel him on the court. And he's had good games against good competition. So I think that when teams get him in, they see him in person, they speak to him, and we see the measurements and stuff. I think he's going to have, like, he's got a chance to have one of the steepest rises in the class.
Yeah. Okay. I have my guy.
Okay.
And, I'm really excited for this conversation, Corey, because I want to hear your thoughts as well. A guy that I mentioned before, he wasn't really on my radar heading into the season. Probably, that's probably on me. But he's had an unbelievable start to his freshman season for Oklahoma. His name is Jeremiah Fears. And I want to have this conversation because this weekend I watched a ton of Jeremiah Fears. And I just went back, watched all his games, and I was like, I want to see again what I've been seeing and make sure that my eyes are not fooling me. And I think the hype he's been getting recently, all, you know, very well deserved. Had a great game against Michigan, against my guy Danny Wolf. And he's a guy that we have to talk about, right? And he's flown up draft boards. With no ceilings, we just submitted boards, and I'm sure he flew up a ton. On my board, he's flown up a ton. And the thing that I wanted to talk about with Corey is I really was like thinking about comps, right? And I really wanted to help myself understand his game, was thinking about different guys that he reminded me of. That shot right there was one of the shots that I highlighted in the little comp video that I made, that little, you know, 18-foot pull-up jumper, right? Off the dribble, going to his left, off the screen, blah, blah, blah. And my mind went to George Hill. I get it. George Hill is not the most exciting name. And Tyler Rucker, he responded to my tweet and was like, higher, like more, right? And you know what? I didn't respond to his tweet at the moment. And a lot of people said it, like, had a similar sentiment. And I didn't respond. And the reason why is because it led me down a rabbit hole and thinking about expectations, thinking about high-end, mid, low-end comps, right? And it made me think about something. And I was like, when Rucker said that, I'm not trying to go to war with Rucker here. I'm just saying when he was like, higher.
We could.
We could. In my mind, I said to him, no, was what I said to him in my mind. I didn't want to tweet it, right? I was just like, no, I refuse. Because what I was thinking was sometimes when we, and this is something that Jeremy Wu of ESPN tells me all the time, is just because you see a good version of something doesn't mean that it's actually good. And so the conclusion I'm trying to get to here, Corey, is that I really like Jeremiah Fears. At the same time, I don't think it's wrong for me to be comfortable in a mid-level comp for him, because as much as I've liked what I've seen from him, this is still very early in the year. We don't know how the rest of his freshman season is going to go. I love the skill set and I love the tools and the ability that he has. However, sometimes if we raise our expectations too high, I feel like we set ourselves up to be just absolutely devastated by young 19-year-old players. And so it's something that I was weighing in my mind and thinking about, like, I think it's really important for us, for all the players that we're studying, to come up with high-end, mid-end, low-end comps, is what I was thinking. And so thinking about Fears, thinking about Rucker saying higher, and then telling myself I refuse. Because if Jeremiah Fears ends up going in the top 10 and has a career like George Hill's, I don't think that's a bust. I think it's a realistic thing that could happen. I'm not saying that it will. I think it could happen. I think Fears could end up being a guy who plays 15 years in the league. Maybe he makes an all-star game, one or two of them, and has a very successful career playing on good competitive teams. Also, high-end, he might end up becoming, who knows, like an all-NBA guy. There are a lot of different expectations, but when thinking about prospects, I think it is important for us to keep a level-headed, mid-tier expectation as well, is something that I wanted to talk about and wanted to hear your thoughts as well.
No, I think that expectation is absolutely an approach that you need to think about, because most guys don't reach, you know, the high-end outcome that,
yes,
we envision for them. And for, it could be for a number of reasons. It could be because they don't work hard enough. It could be because they don't go to the right situation. It could be because they get injured. It could be whatever. So NBA teams approach player comps a lot of times, I think, or not even player comps, but like how they rate a player, very much in the same vein. You know, some have ranking systems and they say, you know, scale of 1 to 10, what is their most likely outcome?
Yeah.
Right. Like that's the way I know a team kind of talks about guys. So to be like, hey, he reminds me of George Hill. George Hill was a really, really good player. Now, Jeremiah Fears, way younger, right?
Yes.
George Hill is a guy that spent a ton of time in college. So what Jeremiah Fears is doing right now as a freshman is really impressive. But yes, again, now he went from a guy who was like outkicking his coverage where people were ranking him to, okay, now he's a guy that most people are going to have in the lottery, top 10, potentially top 5. So now we nitpick at what his game and upside is. Because again, if you're going to take him in the top 5, maybe you don't want him to be George Hill as that outcome. Maybe you need him to hit the Darius Garland, Damian Lillard type outcome where, like, yeah, I think that's like stylistically two guys who he kind of plays like, right? But then, like, you know, there's George Hill. There's also I think he's got a little Trey Mann in his game,
mm-hmm.
who is a really good player, but he's not a 30 team starter.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that, you know, we still need to see how this season plays out. We have to realize that he is young for this class. He reclassified. So we have to take that in consideration as well, that he could be in high school. He's killing it. Oklahoma's winning. Mm-hmm. And like, this is a team that was not expected to really be that competitive.
Right.
And so these are all things to take into consideration. I think the advanced stats people, you know, are going to be maybe indifferent towards him, because I don't think he's going to be like a super advanced stats darling. But when you turn on the film, you see a lot of high and then some lows, right? We want to see better decisions. And similar to Traore, is this a guy who is going to continue to evolve as a playmaker and take some of those early season turnovers and start reading the floor a little better based on what he's seen now at the college level? Can he do that? And is that going to get better, or is he just going to be kind of primarily like a scoring guard who doesn't really have great size, but like is, you know, a pesky defender who gets in the passing lanes or whatever? Is 3-point shot really going to come around? He's a great free throw shooter. You know, like who is he? What is his potential? But to be like, I think he could be George Hill is not a negative. George Hill, you know, I mean, especially he's a guy that every team would love to have playing either as a starter or off the bench. So I don't think you're wrong at all to be like, no, this guy reminds me of this guy. And yeah, it's cool to dream big. I like to dream big with my comps for sure. But that's why, like, I think Fears is on the scale right now. I think he's on the Fears Damian Lillard scale. And where does he rank in between those? Trey Mann, Damian Lillard scale, like where does he rank in between those guys? Because the answer is probably somewhere in between and not like super high necessarily. It's hard. If he was 6'4 for sure or 6'5, right? Different story. But it is hard as a smaller guard. There is less runway in this NBA.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But he's freaking good.
No, he like, is.
He's
he
a
is.
Freaking good player.
Yeah. And my ultimate point is that like he's really changed my mind and he's someone I moved up. He's in my top 10 now. Right. Like, I just feel like with the early season run, but not just that, like you watch him and you watch the skill set. And yes, of course, there are holes. And that's why, like, I really wanted to like be level headed about his comp. But there's so much to like, and it just like for him to be that, like for his physique to be where it is and to see how physical he can be is fun stuff, man. It's really, really fun stuff. So I want to see the continual growth and. He's a guy that I've really changed my mind on and I'm really excited about.
Yeah. And I think everyone should be excited about Jeremiah Fears. He's a baller for sure. All right. Our last wrapped segment that we're going to hit, you know, if you got wrapped, you get your top five for the year. So we're going to run through our personal top five on our boards. These are available if you are a subscriber to No Ceilings Plus. You get our full big boards, our individual boards. We obviously release a big board collectively as a group, but you get access to our full big board, like down to, you know, prospect. If you're Steve, if you're Steven, he might have 400 guys on his big board at some point.
Yes.
Shout out to one of the draft sickos. So you get access to that, but we're going to run through our top five of our board right now. So, okay. Do you want to go with your top five?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is as of 12/27. So that was what, 3 days ago was the last time I updated my board. Number one, you guys may have heard of him, Cooper Flagg, Duke.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, I think he's good. I think he's really good. I like the decisions he's made, signing with New Balance. I know it has nothing to do with his game on the court, but I care about things like that. And I am I'm a flawed scout. So deal with it, guys. But really, really like Cooper Flagg, super young, super good. Not worried about, you know, some of the early season struggles. I cannot wait to see what he looks like at the end of the season. Cannot wait to see what he might do in the tournament this year. Excited. And I know there are limitations on the team that he's on. things like that, but still super excited about what he might will this Duke team to do with, you know, just by himself. So really excited for that. Cooper Flag one. Ace Bailey two. I know this might be a spicy one for some because, yeah, but another problem I have. I was just so in love with him in person and so in love with what I saw. And I still believe in what this is going to look like 10 years from now. I'm still super in. So Ace Bailey, two. Dylan Harper, three. He's been having an absolutely magical freshman season so far. Before we started recording, you know, he's great game. Great game. Triple-double. Awesome. Dylan Harper at three. I really struggled with Dylan Harper, to be honest. I almost pushed him above Ace Bailey, but for now, I'm going to hold on. Just for now. Might change. Four, Yegor Demin from BYU. He's insane. I'm one of the most fun watches on the planet right now is how I feel about Yegor Demin. To be that size. Yeah, I know there are question marks, but just another situation where I'm going to wait and see. I'm not worried. I like guys that are that tall that can pass that well is how I feel about Yegor Demin. Five, Trey Johnson. I really struggled with Trey Johnson here because I almost put another guy there, which I won't reveal because no ceilings plus, get it. So you can see who I struggled with right behind him. But I had to keep Trey Johnson here just because he's having a really good start to his freshman season. He's scoring the ball a ton. I really believe in his passing ability. I do not think he's going to be Cam Thomas. Not to say there's anything wrong with Cam Thomas. Cam Thomas, an elite bucket getter in the NBA. I said it. It's true. It's a fact. Does he pass the ball? No. But that's my thing with Trey Johnson. Trey Johnson passes the ball. And also, Cam Johnson, a little bit better this year passing the ball. Just want to give him that credit for the Brooklyn Nets. So that's my top five. Cooper Flag, Ace Bailey, Dylan Harper, Yegor Demin, and Trey Johnson.
Okay. So we have some overlap. Cooper Flag, number one for me still. Despite the shooting, I think the archetype, 6'8", two-way guy, the shot will only get better. Comfortable pulling up in the mid-range and stuff. Handle, yeah, shaky, loose right now. I think he's going to get stronger. I think he'll figure out a lot of that stuff out. But high feel, you know, really impactful defender. Super high floor. Can fit onto any roster. Dylan at number two. That has been my top two since the summer. If somebody has Dylan over Cooper, I totally get it. I think that Dylan has, you know, real potential to be like an offensive engine kind of player. Special scorer, obvious pedigree, really good passer. I think underrated defender. He's been a monster this year at Rutgers. So big Dylan Harper guy. To me, the top two feels a little bit like Chet and Paolo, you know, where Cooper is obviously more Chet. Dylan is more Paolo. Paolo's that guy who, yeah, maybe he might struggle with inefficiency at times, but like you need guys that are going to be able to take tough shots and, you know, take some of the grenades and shoulder the load. I think that Dylan is going to be able to do that. And then, you know, Chet obviously is the ultimate fill in the blanks guy who could get to 20 points if he really wanted to. I think he'd be a 20 point scorer in this league easily. While being an absolute monster defensively, right? And just being the perfect complement to a winning situation. And I think that's what Cooper can do too. I think Chet's defensive impact will be higher just because of, you know, the height and the shot blocking length. I don't think Cooper is going to be quite the shot blocker at the NBA level that Chet was. And Chet was obviously a better shooter or whatever, but like Cooper on the wing, valuable position. So I think that's how that top two is going to play out. At three, I have Yegor Demin. I know he's been out. I know that against the top teams, he struggled a little bit. I'm willing to give him more than a couple of games. You know, I thought against Ole Miss, which was the first game everybody freaked out about, I still thought he was pretty good. I thought he let the game come to him. You know, he still hit some, you know, impressive shots in my mind, made a ton of passes. And I think that, like, he's just like a really safe prospect with a super high upside. Like if the shot keeps developing, he's more athletic than you give credit for. He's had like a couple of really nice left-handed like yams. So I feel for the game. I'm still there. At number four, I have Derek Queen, which this is a guy I've been high on. He came into the year for me at six, and I've only moved him up slightly. Queen reminds me offensively a little bit of Cat. Now, mm-hmm. I know on the surface, you're like, well, Karl-Anthony Towns is one of the best big man shooters, so Derek Queen's not a good shooter. I realize that. But I think that Cat has like a really good face-up game. I think he's really good leveraging the threat of his shot to kind of attack. And even without the threat of a shot, I think Derek Queen is still able to really attack from the perimeter, because I think his handle is massively underrated. I think he is super agile. And I think people think of him as a back-to-the-basket guy, but he is a slasher. He can post you up and kill you with footwork. And he's hit shots in the mid-range that make me go, I think he's going to shoot it. Is he going to shoot it at the level Cat did? I don't think so. And Cat was a way better and more explosive defensive player than Derek Queen was. So I'm not trying to say he is a Karl-Anthony Towns level prospect, but Derek Queen continues to impress me. He continues to just put up big games. And I think he's just really, really good. And there's a world where I think he's one of the four, five, three, two best players in this class. When we look back on it, and I think as he continues to work on his body, hopefully the defense continues to get better. I think he can flip his hips. I think he can slide his feet. I think he'll wall guys off. I don't think he's very explosive, so he's probably not going to be a big time shot blocking threat, but he's got quick hands. He's smart. I'm all in on Derek Queen. I think because he's like got a little bit of a gut, people might overthink who he is. And then at number five, I have Ace Bailey. Because I'm not completely off the Ace Bailey bandwagon either. Look, I'm a big proponent of advanced stats. I think that advanced stats can really tell you a lot about a player's game over the course of a season. But let's let the season play out. Ace is super young, and he's 6'10", and he could make really tough shots. And he might not have a bag, although I think that his handle is probably a little bit better than people give it credit for. But I think he plays a little bit upright sometimes. So I think he's got to learn to get a little bit more bendy, a little more high to low. I think he's a good defender, and I think his floor is higher than people give credit for, because I think, if you put him in a role where he's Michael Porter Jr., I think he can play that role. He's going to get stronger. He's going to be able to absorb contact in the paint better as his frame fills out. Okay. He might not be T-Mac or Paul George or whoever. To be completely honest, at Hoop Summit, watching him next to and competing with AJ DeBonta, or like seeing the US practice and then the world practice, it put things in perspective the entire time for me with Ace, because it was like, oh, like AJ's on a completely different planet than Ace, because that handle and that creation and all that stuff is already there. And he's another tall, athletic wing. So I already had tempered expectations with Ace, but I still really liked him. I really liked him when I saw him at the Rutgers practice over the summer. I loved what I saw behind the scenes at Hoop Summit. He's got a lot of room to grow. And if you're swinging, there's way worse guys I've seen people swing on than Ace Bailey. So I am cautiously optimistic that BPM will go up to a level where you can go, all right, he was up and down. He was struggling in a role. Yeah, I'm worried about the playmaking and the passing or whatever. It might not come this year, mm-hmm. you know, like, and maybe it never comes, but if not, if he's just a guy who's in a off ball role as an offensive player, as a number two or number three option, and that's his bet, that's still worth a top five pick to me.
Yeah.
You know, a healthy Michael Porter Jr. in this role, you still spend a top five pick on that prospect. Right. So I think Ace is going to figure it out and be a guy who impacts winning at some point. Maybe not the guy you build your franchise around, but a guy that you can really get excited about, especially if you have a couple of guys that you are already building around, and he's just another really young piece with high upside. So I'm not out on Ace by any stretch of the imagination. I'm still in. I'm still waiting. I don't think I could abandon ship. There's too many things I've seen that I've liked. He scores. He hits shots. Like, I don't know. When you're 6'10" and you have a high release point, like, sometimes shooting over a guy is not the same as, like, you know, a 6'2" guard having to do a combo move and get into that same spot. Like, it's the degree of difficulty is just different. I'm still in on Ace.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Corey, we live in a world where Sam Darnold is leading the Minnesota Vikings to an unbelievable season, and took him 7 years, you know, three miserable seasons in New York, two in Carolina. One,
I'm starting to sense a pattern in that. These New York teams.
Watch out for Zach Wilson, guys, in 3 years.
2028.
Oh, God. Okay. But no, Corey, I think, yeah, I get it. The Derek Queen call is, I love it, because you've been on him forever. And I actually have him right outside my top five as well. Love Derek Queen. Love it. And also, like, for the gut stuff, like, he's already improved his physique. So, not worried in the least about that. Like, his physique is only going to get better, in my opinion. Just my opinion. Who knows, right? We've seen it go the other way.
Could get worse.
Yeah, exactly. Zion. I absolutely believe that. I think it's going to get better, and he's been unbelievable this season. So, yeah.
Yeah, really fun player. I'm really excited that we are starting to hit, like, some really competitive games. I mean, you know, we still have, like, you know, Michigan State versus Western Michigan Community College, State University, you know, games like that. But we're approaching, like, conference play where it's going to be consistent, you know, high level matchups, and we can really see what these guys are made of and who's growing. And there's going to still be guys who are, you know, haven't really popped yet, but I think there are going to be guys that show up the rest of the cycle that we're not really talking about yet, that are going to surprise and then they're going to pop, you know, and maybe it's like a role player kind of guy or whatever, but we know that's how this works out. Like, people just, they get on the radar and they get a little momentum. And I think that's what 2025 is going to bring us. I think it's going to, we haven't seen all of the prospects yet that we want to hype up and talk about and scout, but really exciting class. This has been an exciting year. What do you have a favorite memory from 2024 with no ceilings?
It's been a great year. Nike Hoop Summit was awesome. We stayed at Tony Stark's house. Was super fun. We ate a ton of great food. Got to meet great people. Was awesome. I want to say this year, I'm so happy Nathan came back. Love having Nathan back. Always. Just the energy and the drive that that man has, the passion that he has, the way he speaks, my Amish king. So thankful Nathan is
Allentown's finest.
But yeah, man, it's been an unbelievable year. And I've been thinking a lot about next year. I bought like 10 books on Amazon. I want to get back into like heavy reading this year. Want to keep writing. Want to keep bringing my best to our pod as well. I bought books on like the Roman Empire and Genghis Khan and like random stuff. Like, I'm I'm locked in, dude. I'm ready. But
Byzantine Empire.
But I'm really excited. And 2024 was a great year. Hey, Corey, I just want to say, like, also props to us. We became dads this year, and no, we never bitched about it, never complained, and we've been just grinding, and, you know, enjoying life and super thankful for family and health and all those things. And so, yeah, No Ceilings has been an unbelievable blessing, and I love that we get to do this. And Corey, you know something? I was thinking about this the other day. Like, we've been doing this for a minute now, even before No Ceilings, you know, and like, especially around this time, like, holiday season, you think about, you know, what happened the last year. And then I'm thinking about, like, damn, the last couple of years being able to do this with you and learning from you, working with you has been such an honor for me. And so really excited for more to come in the new year, man.
Yeah, man. I mean, and I think when we first started our pod, was it like January, February? Like, we started it late. We came together. Because I had the idea for the draft act when we were really calling it that. Initially, this was before No Ceilings was a site, and draft act was going to be like the website name. And then the whole thing with you know, all the investment apps had happened. And I was like, oh no, I just can't have somebody steal this idea. I think it's really good. I guess I got to make it a pod. And I don't know how to program a real functioning website like I had in my mind. So I hit you up. You said yes. And then we started it and it was late, but we had a great time with that. And then, you know, that evolved to No Ceilings. And we've been doing it for a minute. The Hoop Summit is always fun. Anytime multiple members of No Ceilings can get together in person, it's special because we're spread out throughout the country, which benefits us when, you know, we want to scout games live, right? We can hit up different regions. But we don't get to see each other all the time. You know, I've hung out with Nathan a couple of times, you know, this year, getting to see games with him, on the East Coast when he comes to New York. But, you know, it's really like Summer League, Hoop Summit, you know, right? Where we all collectively get to come together. And those are where we really have the best times. And not only, like you said, not even always with the basketball stuff, right? Just like going to the Nike campus or, you know, like getting a great steak dinner. So I'm very appreciative of everybody in the No Ceilings family. I'm appreciative of all everybody at home who, you know, taps in and watches with us. And you guys are spending your New Year's Eve watching with us tonight. And if you're watching the replay, then we appreciate you too. If you're listening on the podcast, on the replay, we appreciate you too. But, you know, the community that we built, we love you guys. And that's really what it is. It's community. You know, when we write, we want your feedback. When we're potting and we're streaming, we want you guys to participate, right? That's why I love the Discord that we have. You know, when you subscribe to No Ceilings Plus, and we have the community who is just talking draft all day in our Discord channel. So I think it's really cool, and I think we got some fun stuff in store for 2025, and we're only going to continue to grow and get bigger and better, and that's going to allow us to do a lot of cool stuff for everybody involved. So shout out to you, shout out to the team, shout out to 2025. Albert, I think we got a countdown because it seems that the clock is about to hit midnight. So let's count it down. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
25, everybody. Thank you for rocking with us. As always, we love you. We cherish you. We appreciate you. Cheers to everyone. We will see you in 2025. Let's go. Until then, we're out. Peace.